This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
It's the Media Buzz Meter with Howard Kurtz.
I am kicking myself because I wanted to talk about SNL on yesterday's podcast, and I just got wrapped up in 17 other things. You know, I don't stay up until 1 in the morning on Saturday nights because I've got a Sunday show, and I'm not sure I would anyway. But there was a lot of buzz because it was the beginning of the 48th season, but without Kate McKinnon and three other of the well-known players. And there was both positive and negative reviews about this cold open, the opening sketch, which was said to be sort of Saturday Night Live taking on itself over its own internal turmoil. But when I watched it, it didn't really do much for me. I thought the whole thing was pretty lame. I mean, the premise was that you had Peyton Manning and Eli Manning, two well-known pro footballers, doing a sort of a critique, you know, rating it as you would on a sports cast, of this pretty lame, I think intentionally lame, Trump skit that got lamer and lamer and more partisan. But there were really only a couple of oblique references to the turmoil at SNL. I thought it was going to be a lot more explicit. Lots of people said it was a great impression of Peyton Manning. I've seen Peyton Manning play a lot of football games. I haven't heard him talk much, so I don't know. I'll take people's words for it. But, you know, if the idea was to show that SNL was going to turn the scrutiny on itself and deal with the fact that these people had left and they were trying to get new people launched, I just didn't think it really lived up to that expectation. Yeah, some people loved it. I just thought the whole thing was pretty lame. And I think it's going to have a tough season. And now some people are saying, well, you know, maybe a couple more seasons, 50 years is enough. It does make everybody who's watched the first episode back in the 70s feel kind of old. But anyway, moving on from SNL. Chris Cuomo debuted his new show on News Nation, part of Nextar, and this is where he landed after being fired at CNN. And his tone was interesting. He said, you know, I've learned lessons good and bad. I've relied on my family, my friends, my therapist. This is a new Chris Cuomo. And thankfully, it's been the case that what doesn't kill us makes us stronger. I've been humbled by what happened. I'm hungry to do better. He said, look, you know, I know politics from the inside because I grew up as the son of Mario Cuomo. Picture of Cuomo, the senior, flashed on the screen. Didn't make any mention of, he said son and brother, but mostly it was about his dad. That he had worked not only at CNN, but at ABC News in top positions, actually started out at Fox News, and he wants to take on the groupthink of partisan reporting. Now, this is obviously quite a repositioning for a guy who proved in improperly helping his brother, the then governor, that I know he didn't do it because Andrew was a Democrat. He did it because Andrew's his brother. But still, you know, on his CNN show, as CNN moved into the anti-Trump camp, Cuomo did come off many times as a partisan Democrat. But now he says, I'm not coming from a place of cynicism. You'll hear some stuff about what makes us great. And we are manipulated by manufactured division that only works to advance the interests of the fringe and the fake. So this, you know, he kind of implies that he was part of the problem, manufactured division, but now he's going to be above the fray and he's going to hold all sides accountable. He's going to show you how the game works. Okay, look, Chris is a smart guy. I've known him for a very long time. Obviously, he must be humbled and shaken and in need of therapy, and he's also acknowledged that he has a drinking problem after what he's been through. So, just as obviously, News Nation is a relatively small audience, and he said, well, that's a good thing because no preconceptions about what they're going to see here on one partisan side or the other. He also said that he and others had spent way too much time relying on Twitter, but actually most people aren't on Twitter, and the people who are very strong, Democrats or Republicans, are only 20%. I guess it depends on how you ask the poll questions. And then finally he said, he put up a, you know, like an 800 number, one of those 800 related numbers, and said, you know, we're gonna know what you think, and they're going to take some calls. Well, that's the old Larry King formula. It is old school. Maybe that can work. I mean, if all the people want to sound off, call, obviously only a small fraction will get on the air. He says, we'll take calls when we can. But anyway, that's the new show. We'll see if he is indeed a changed man and whether the show reflects that and whether that will catch on. I want to lead off the buzz meter count here, since the midterms are looming so large and we're really down to crunch time. Here it is, early October, with a couple of items related to, you know, a couple of the Senate races in particular, because, look, it's going to come down to one or possibly two Senate races. I mean, the Democrats only have a 50-50 lead. So if they end up again with a 50-50 tie, it will limit what they can do, but you'll have Kamala Harris to break the tie. If they lose by one seat, Mitch McConnell is the next majority leader. And if somehow, at the last minute, Kyrsten Sinema, who's obviously been courted by McConnell, decides to cross over and become a Republican, having concluded that she'd have a very tough time getting reelected in Arizona as a Democrat in 2 years, then that would give the Republicans the majority. And you can't say that's foul play, because the Democrats did the same thing during the first George W. Bush term. Jim Jeffords, as I recall, switched parties, and that gave the Dems the temporary edge in the Senate for the rest of that 2 year cycle. Anyway, story number one, Herschel Walker in Georgia. Now, let me just set this up by saying that Herschel Walker has survived mistakes and attacks that I think it's fair to say would sink most other candidates. So something that people like about him, his name, his reputation, his college football reputation, his pro football reputation, because in some polls he was, you know, either like 1 point down or in a tie. I mean, that is a statistical tie with the incumbent who won in the special election, Senator Raphael Warnock, two African-American candidates going against each other. And this included him saying, you know, he would just say, look, I had mental health problems. I made mistakes. I did things I shouldn't have. His former wife cut an ad, a devastating ad, saying that he had threatened her and other accusations. But I think a lot of people would say, well, you know, she's bitter and maybe I should just discount that. So he has maintained his viability. And Walker, who has been, a pro-fatherhood crusader, also had to admit that he had other children who he had not really publicly acknowledged. So it's been a bit of a mess, but he's still very competitive. But now, you have a report in the Daily Beast saying that Herschel Walker, who is 100% pro-life and would not only ban all abortions in the state of Georgia, but with no exceptions, paid for a girlfriend's abortion back in 2009. Walker is calling that a flat-out lie. Well, let's see, what does the Daily Beast have? Because the woman is not named, and obviously it would be easier to assess her credibility if she were to come forward with her name. She supported the claims with a $575 receipt from the abortion clinic. Okay. A get-well card from Walker. Okay. And a bank deposit receipt that included an image of a signed $700 personal check from Herschel Walker. Now, that, more than anything, so we know she went to the abortion clinic, and we know Herschel Walker gave her $700. That's a pretty strong prima facie case. She said there was a $125 difference between the receipt at the abortion clinic and what Herschel Walker gave her, because she'd only ballparked the cost of getting an abortion after Googling it and added on such expenses as travel and recovery costs. The Daily Beast independently corroborated details of the woman's claims, this is from the story, with a close friend she told at the time, and who, according to the woman and the friend, took care of her in the days after the procedure. The woman, this other woman, said Walker, who was not married at the time, told her it would be more convenient to terminate the pregnancy, saying it was, quote, not the right time for him to have a child. So Herschel Walker went on Fox News with Hannity last night, and when asked about the check, he said, well, you know, I send money to a lot of people. I believe in being generous. I'm sorry, that's a weak response. Herschel Walker may be the most generous man on the planet, but the odds of him happening to write a $700 check to the woman, whose identity we don't know, claims that he not only strongly encouraged her to have an abortion, but paid for her abortion, is not, it's a questionable denial in my view. Then comes the second part, sort of 1-2 punch here. So after that story was published, one of Walker's children, Christian Walker, is 23 years old. He's campaigned with his father. He, in December, tweeted a video of him hugging his father. He has been in support of his dad's Senate candidacy. And he just went off, posted a bunch of things. I know my mom and I would really appreciate if my father, Herschel Walker, stopped lying and making a mockery of us. He said that Walker, that his father, threatened to kill us, that's a quote, and caused him and his mother to move 6 times in 6 months, quote, running from your violence. He goes on to say, as I see in other stories, this is again Christian Walker, age 23, you're not a family man when you left us to bang a bunch of women, threatened to kill us, had us move over 6 times in 6 months, running from your violence. Herschel Walker's only response is, I love my son no matter what. But the son replied, and later deleted this particular tweet, you have 4 kids that we know of, and you weren't in the house raising one of them. You were out cheating and lying. If you loved your kids, you'd be raising them instead of running for a Senate race to boost your ego. Now, just if I can just weigh in for a second, there's just something that grabs me about his son saying this, about his son turning on the dad and in that kind of language, in a way that the ex-wife's accusations didn't quite do it because, you know, in a bitter divorce, you who knows? Christian Walker also said, by the way, that other family members discouraged his father from running for office because we all knew his past or some of his past. So he had to know, I would imagine, if this is true, it's an allegation, it's an accusation, he's denying it, that this might come out in a hard-fought campaign. Now, let me go to Eric Erickson, longtime radio host in Georgia, and a conservative with a pretty strong following. He talked about the ex-wife's ad, saying it's having an impact on Christian women who don't like Warnock, but have so many doubts about Walker, they may sit it out. And if you add to that, says Erickson, his purported hypocrisy over abortion and the Warnock strategy seems very clear. They're not trying to get people to vote for Warnock or against Walker. They are trying to get voters to just not vote in that race at all. Warnock thinks all the Democrats will vote for him. All the pro-abortion voters will vote for him, he says. He wants the pro-lifers to just pass the race by and move on to Brian Kemp, the governor who would also be on the ballot. He wants independent voters to pass over Walker too. I'm not sure they will, he says, but I'm also not sure they won't. Even if the allegation is from over a decade ago, Walker has not mounted a credible response to the initial ad, and we'll see what evidence the Daily Beast has now.
Don't go anywhere. More BuzzMeter coming your way in just a moment.
The Fox News Rundown, a contrast of perspectives you won't hear anywhere else. Your daily dose of news twice a day, featuring insight from top newsmakers, reporters, and Fox News contributors. Listen and subscribe now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.
Number two, the key Senate race in Pennsylvania. where Dr. Oz, not a great candidate, running against John Fetterman, who has, you know, a very liberal record as lieutenant governor, but of course the main issue with him is, you know, how much has he recovered from the stroke? And he's been doing some interviews lately, but, you know, he gets closed captioning sometimes to help him process the words. So, according to this Washington Post piece, and this was inevitable, and I'll say right at the top, this is fair game, because this was talked about, and Dr. Mehmet Oz was criticized for this long before he decided to become a politician. Leads off this way. Mehmet Oz looked directly into the camera and introduced his daytime television viewers to a, quote, controversial weight loss approach, taking a hormone that women produce during pregnancy combined with a diet of 500 calories a day. 500 calories a day? That's extraordinarily low. Does it really work? Is it safe? Is it a miracle? Or is it hype? He asked in a 2011 episode of the Dr. Oz Show before introducing his audience to HCG, a weight loss doctor who promoted it. In fact, there was little uncertain about the HCG diet. Numerous studies conducted in the years before that show had shown that the fertility drug does not cause weight loss, redistribute fat, or suppress hunger. 10 months later, the FDA warned seven companies making this stuff that they were violating the law by making such claims. Nevertheless, Oz came back in 2012, gave a platform to the same weight loss doctor. Now, during the run of his show, 2009 to last year, Oz provided a platform, again, I'm reading from the Washington Post story here, for potentially dangerous products and fringe viewpoints aimed at millions of viewers, according to medical experts, public health organizations, and federal health guidance. He promoted an herbal weight loss product that FDA said can cause liver damage, and selenium, a trace mineral needed for normal body functioning for cancer prevention. And then some professor who tried to get Oz kicked off the faculty at Columbia University said he's been an advocate of quack cures. Now, Oz and his defenders, the piece says, said the approach of his program was to give viewers hope and provide different points of view. And some of the guests who appeared on the show included Oprah Winfrey, Michelle Obama, and Cory Booker. Oz campaign would not provide an interview. But his spokeswoman, said on his show, Dr. Oz welcomed open, honest conversations and opinions from all kinds of folks. It's idiotic and preposterous to imply he shared the same beliefs and opinions as every guest on the show. Okay. So that was going to come up inevitably. And as I said, it was debated during the years that he was on the air with that program. And, you know, it was a big part of his celebrity. So that's fair game. But now, today, NBC is giving a platform to this. A report by the female-oriented website Jezebel, but again, NBC is sort of promoting this, that research by Dr. Oz from 1989 to 2010 inflicted suffering on and killed over 300 dogs, 31 pigs, and 661 rabbits and rodents while he was a principal investigator at a Columbia University lab. And just last week, the Senate passed the FDA Modernization Act that would eliminate a federal mandate that the law that created the FDA essentially back in 1938 required animal testing for new drugs. Now, this is completely and totally partisan and unfair. And I'll tell you why. Because animal testing, you know, as sad as it is for the animals who lose their lives, has been the absolute standard for new drugs used by many, 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 many doctors, researchers, and so forth for the greater good of determining whether or not something would be safe to give to humans. You're not going to experiment on a bunch of human beings, right? So you did animal testing. Now, we can debate the merits of animal testing and how much it really shows about the effect on men and women. But you can't. I mean, it's like saying it was horrible for, I don't know, workers who worked on asbestos before we knew asbestos caused cancer. This is singling out one guy as if he's just taking great glee in killing dogs. It's a cheap shot. It completely goes against the context that this is the widespread accepted, and not only accepted, but required medical practice until now to single out Dr. Oz as some sort of sadist. So I'm going to blow the whistle on that one. All right, number three. Took me a while to get to Donald Trump, but here it is. Donald Trump, or his lawyers, actually filed a lawsuit against CNN yesterday, asking for $475 million in punitive damages. Now, you know, I've talked about how Donald Trump just drives the news cycle and drives the news cycle. And my column today on Fox is all about, and we talked about this yesterday on the podcast, so pay attention. Could be a quiz. Trump saying Mitch McConnell had a death wish, which the Wall Street Journal conservative editorial page just absolutely whacked him for. And he should listen to his China-loving wife, Coco Chow, C-H-O-W, Elaine Chow, C-H-A-O, as I mentioned yesterday, was his own transportation secretary, but she quit after January 6th. Mitch denounced Trump after the Capitol riot. And a lot of people think that Truth Social post went too far. And now including me. I mean, it was just ambiguous enough that it could be said, as the Journal said, to incite violence. So he's off that now. He's suing CNN, as he said he was going to do. CNN carried out a campaign of libel and slander against Trump. And the network's response is, you've not identified a single false or defamatory statement in your letter. It listed something like 34 segments. It is well established that the outcome of the 2020 presidential election was unaffected by fraud, as verified by, and it goes through 50 lawsuits were unsuccessful, the sanctioning of lawyers who made these unsubstantiated claims of fraud, investigations by DOJ, by Congress, by various state and local bodies. But, you know, it's a way, and I'm sure, whatever you think of CNN, and whether you think CNN was totally unfair to Donald Trump, and CNN did sort of become part of the resistance and got the sugar high of the ratings when it kind of was sort of like MSNBC Lite with these 6-to-1 panels against Trump. Okay. But that's very different than saying CNN should pay the former president $475 million because there is something called the First Amendment. Now, if he can prove that CNN said things that were false, knowingly said they were false, you might have a case. But take it from me. This case is never going to go to trial. I'm not defending CNN here. I'm saying you can't perpetuate something that you haven't been able to prove. I know most of Trump's Republican followers believe the unproven claims of fraudulent 2020 election. And it's the kind of thing that makes a splash, and at some later point, it will be thrown out. At what level of the court system, I don't know. And he says he's going to sue others, so each of these is going to get him some attention. Speaking of attention, that Kim Kardashian story seemed to get, you know, they were showing a lot of pictures of her on the news yesterday, and then it kind of faded. I mean, I just think it's a combination of celebrity, crypto, secret $250,000 payment, I just thought it would be a little bit more of a bigger deal. I think a lot of media people just like the Kardashians. All right, more on Trump. Former president, this is a Washington Post scoop, asked one of his lawyers to tell the National Archives, this is in February of this year, that Trump had returned all the materials requested by the agency, but the lawyer said, no, because he was not sure the statement was true, according to people familiar with the matter. As it turned out, as we all know, thousands of government documents, including some highly classified ones, we've all seen the top secret stamping, remained at Mar-a-Lago and until the August 8th raid by the FBI. Alex Cannon was the attorney's name. He had facilitated the January transfer of 15 boxes of presidential records from Mar-a-Lago to the archives. And then archives officials said, you got more stuff, you got to turn it over. This guy is a former Trump Organization lawyer who also worked for the campaign, worked for Trump after the presidency. He told Trump he could not tell the archives all the requested material had been returned because he was not sure He was too uncomfortable to make this claim. Other Trump advisors also encouraged Cannon not to make such a definitive statement. As a result of the lawyer putting his foot down, Trump had to release a different statement, which said the papers were given easily and without conflict and on a very friendly basis, which is different from the accounts being drawn up by the fake news media, which this particular statement came on the same day that the Washington Post reported that classified material was found in the 15 boxes. So he's gone on after the fake news media, but it turns out, in this case, the leading avatar of the fake news media, the Jeff Bezos' Washington Post, reported something that turned out to be true. And notice that the statement says, oh, it's friendly and we're cooperating, but doesn't say flatly that everything's been returned because he couldn't get a lawyer to sign off on that. Just briefly here, the founder of the Oath Keepers, Stuart Rhodes, has gone on trial for his role in the January 6th attack. And in the opening argument, federal prosecutors, you know, the word bombshell is very overused by the media, including by me at various times, but this is a bombshell. Audio recordings of the defendant, not previously heard by the public. Rhodes was recorded in the days after the attack saying his only regret was that the group should have brought rifles to the Capitol that day. Prosecutors revealed in their opening statement, and DOJ said that the Oath Keepers concocted a plan for an armed rebellion. And there's also texts, I believe, to members of the Oath Keepers saying, don't tell anybody about this, don't discuss our role, STFU.
Don't go anywhere. More BuzzMeter coming your way in just a moment.
All right, number four. Elon Musk, despite the fact that he's locked in this litigation with Twitter over whether he needs to be forced to buy the company, despite the fact that he runs Tesla, despite the fact that he runs SpaceX, apparently still has time to weigh into everything. And this time, he weighed in on the war in Ukraine. And let's just say there was a lot of return fire for what he did. He put up his own thoughts about a potential peace deal between Ukraine and Russia, and he did it in the form of a poll. So in the poll, world's richest man, it's a yes-no kind of survey. He's got 108 million followers. That's even more than he had when he first announced he was going to buy Twitter. He said, here's the plan for peace. Redo elections of annexed regions under UN supervision. Russia leaves if that is the will of the people. Well, I just throw in here that Ukraine has taken over large parts of that annexed territory, and Russia seems to be on the run. Number two, Crimea, formerly part of Russia as it has been since 1783 until Khrushchev's mistake. Well, that was a Russian invasion, an invasion of a sovereign country in 2014. But he's happy to have it given back. Three, water supply to Crimea assured. Four, Ukraine remains neutral. Ukraine, which has just applied for NATO membership. At the time that this particular article was written, and numbers may have changed, no had received over 60% of the vote. That prompted Elon Musk to say, well, the results were caused by, quote, the biggest bot attack I've ever seen. And that drew plenty of mockery. And by the way, you know, he's still blaming the bots. He blames the bots for the idea that Twitter doesn't have as many active users as it claims. Now he's blaming the bots, if indeed there are bots on this particular thing, for screwing up his survey. But the ridicule and mockery that Elon Musk has received over this is simply incredible. But the kicker is that Ukraine's ambassador to Germany actually posted what he called a diplomatic reply to Elon Musk, and that was telling him to F off. Well, Ukraine didn't like it. A lot of Twitter users didn't like it. And look, he stuck his head up on this. Obviously, he, you know, his argument is there's going to be a negotiated solution eventually. Why not do it now before more people are killed? But I don't know that this is the most fair and balanced, certainly the Crimea part. And also, you know, right now, at this particular moment, the Ukrainians are winning this war. The Russians have suffered two devastating defeats. They didn't take over Kyiv. They had to pull back. And then they decided to try to annex these regions on the eastern border. And Ukraine has captured a lot of that land. So this would not be the time for Ukraine to say, yeah, you know what, we'll just sort of give it all up now and we'll come to some kind of compromise. It's just not going to happen. Unfortunately, I think this war is going to drag on for a long time. And finally, number five, reading here from a Bloomberg piece, Supreme Court, which came in for its term yesterday with Ketanji Brown Jackson on the bench, is going to decide, based on a couple of cases, whether social media companies, speaking of Twitter and also Facebook and Instagram and Google, YouTube, can be sued for hosting and recommending terrorist content. And this all has to do with the Section 230 you've probably heard about. It's a law that kind of gives broad immunity to social media companies. You know, we're just a product like the electric company, people post stuff. We're not a media company, not our fault. Well, you know, there are people on the right and the left that want to take that immunity away or at least greatly modify it. So in one of the cases that SCOTUS is going to hear, Google trying to defeat a suit involving Noemi Gonzalez, a 23-year-old U.S. citizen who was among 129 people killed in a coordinated ISIS attack or attacks in Paris back in 2015. Gonzalez's family says that Google's YouTube, through its algorithms, violated the Anti-Terrorism Act by recommending the terrorist group's videos to other users. So that's not just being a passive player like, oh, we don't know what people are posting. If there's an algorithm that recommends it, then that, it's a pretty interesting argument, and I'm sorry that this guy was among the many killed by ISIS. Nevertheless, the question is whether or not these social media giants, these Silicon Valley giants, are putting their corporate thumbs on the scale or editing third-party content. The other case was similar. So Google says YouTube used a sidebar tool to queue up videos based on user inputs, including browser history. Company says the only alleged link between the Paris attacker and YouTube was that one attacker was an active user of the video sharing service and once appeared in an ISIS propaganda video. The court should not lightly adopt a reading of Section 230 that would threaten the basic organizational decisions of the modern internet, says Google. Nice little internet you got here. Be a shame if anything happened to it. Look, Google's basically saying, you know, we serve up things according to people's browsing history, and you can't blame us for that. And at the same time, the argument being made by those involved in this lawsuit is, you have algorithms. It's designed to push certain kinds of content. You're making recommendations, and that is sharing stuff from terrorists. It's a fascinating debate, and one that undoubtedly will drag on the courts ultimately. Although here it is at Supreme Court. If the Supreme Court does a ruling on this, we'll see what the impact on the internet is, but it might finally bring some measure of accountability to these tech giants. With that, I always thank you for your time. Really appreciate your listeners. I wish I could have you call in, but you can leave comments on Apple iTunes, which happens to be a good place, or on your Amazon device to get this particular podcast. We're back here tomorrow with more BuzzMeter.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Janice Dean, Fox News senior meteorologist. Be sure to subscribe to the Janice Dean Podcast at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your podcasts. And don't forget to spread the sunshine.